Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics.
Sean Payton was horrible in clock management. That should never be the case with this New Orleans Saints team.
Well, we're waiting.
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Welcome back into another edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Happy as always to be along with you on the afternoon drive. And we have a fun show lined up today. We're going to have a couple of different conversations. First off, we're going to be joined by one of my favorite reoccurring guests on the show, Larry Pepe. Terrific, terrific MMA mind. I had a segment on Friday where I talked about the failed venture of UFC and Dana White to try to get UFC 249 off the ground on tribal land in California. And the idea and the insanity behind it, I tip my hat to Dana. Didn't work. I don't think anyone actually thought we were going to get UFC 249. There was a very brief moment where I had a slither of hope, but ultimately it was shut down. What does that mean for the entire national sports scene at this moment? To me, it would have gone a long way for it to be socially acceptable had the UFC found a way to get this event off, but they didn't. So how does that affect everything else happening in the national sports front? Larry Pepe is going to join us. We'll share a brief conversation about UFC 249, but I also want to get his general thoughts on the idea of getting professional sports back within the next month, month and a half. And again, as we discussed yesterday on the show, the NBA has a proposed 25-day stretch that could see us get back and finish the year in June. So it would basically be a 25-day program that would work throughout the month of May. So we'll talk about that. Again, Larry Pepe, one of the best MMA minds you will meet. He will join us on the show. I always look forward to the conversations with Larry. Also, we're going to go back to the 1980s. I'm excited for this segment. I'm a fan of the game of baseball. I love the history of baseball. And I have a couple of guests lined up this week to talk and give us information based on certain eras. Today, we're going to go to the Bay Area. We're going to talk Oakland A baseball, and author Dale Tafoya will join us. Tafoya's new book, Billy Bull, Billy Martin and the Resurrection of the Oakland A's, is available right now. If you want to read it digitally, you can. If you want to order it off Amazon, you can. But I think it's a very interesting era in baseball, specifically if you're an A's fan. But if you're not an A's fan and you just love the game of baseball, I'm going to tell you why I find this story so interesting. Billy Martin had a three-year stretch with the Oakland A's, and you could make the argument that the A's remained in Oakland and had outstanding success in the late 80s because of that three-year stretch with Billy Martin. Not only was he one of the most fascinating characters to manage a baseball team, but he also managed players like Ricky Henderson the way they were meant to be used. See, this goes before an analytical age. Billy Martin played aggressive, almost reckless type of baseball, and it worked for the A's. They went from being a team that was 50 games under 500 to being over 500 to having a clear chance at winning the 1981 World Series. So I think it's a fascinating era. And again, we're not talking about a decade, 12, 15 years. We're not talking about building something over the course of a large period of time. We're talking about Billy Martin taking over a team, turning them into contenders almost overnight, and then getting fired 3 years after doing that. So to me, this could be a very fascinating segment. I'm looking forward to getting Dale on the show. We'll get to that interview in just a little bit here on Drive Time Sports. Let's take a look at some of the national headlines, and we will begin with some sad news coming out of Major League Baseball. Yankees co-owner Hank Steinbrenner has passed away at the age of 63. After a lengthy illness, the team said he died at his home in Clearwater, Florida, due to long-standing health issues. He was a chain smoker and a miniature drag racer as well. He wanted to be the guy that would take over the team as the controlling owner for his father. Obviously, that wasn't the case. Brother Hal, who's 11 years younger, was put in charge in November of 2008. Hank was in his 13th season as general partner. Now, the team's official statement came out earlier today, and they gave him credit as being responsible for overseeing all areas of the club's business and baseball operations, including involvement in contract negotiations and the club's overall strategy. Again, some sad news coming out of Major League Baseball today. Hank Steinbrenner has passed away at the age of 63 years old. We had this discussion on the show yesterday. Really, the national sports headlines are going to be controlled by the NFL draft, which is a little more than a week away. It'll be next Thursday, so we're about 9 days away from the NFL draft. Very quiet on the NFL front today. No trades of any note, really nothing popping up in the NFL. Yesterday, we had the Christian McCaffrey deal that was kind of the big topic regarding the National Football League. Nothing today. It's been quiet on that front. And so today, looking forward to a couple of what should be very interesting conversations. Before we take a quick commercial break, it is important to announce that the Utah High School Activities Association made an announcement about 30 to 45 minutes ago that, in accordance with Governor Gary Herbert and the state superintendent's announcement earlier today, that Utah schools will be closed to in-person learning for the remainder of the school year. And with that, the UHSAA has canceled all remaining spring activities, including sports and state championships. And also, the policies prohibit the use of school facilities in organizing practices or team gatherings until further notice. So that was the news that was just broke about 45 minutes ago. And again, it's not a huge surprise. I've been dreading that. I thought that that was obviously the most likely scenario, but I think myself, as well as parents, coaches, athletes, all held out hope that maybe we would get something of the spring sports season, but it has been canceled as of today by the Utah High School Activities Association, and so no more local sports, at least for the foreseeable future. That announcement coming about 45 minutes ago, and you can get the full press release right now at CastleCountryRadio.com. We've got a break for just a moment. Again, more Drive Time Sports coming up. And on the local sports front, we'll continue our season reviews. We'll go all the way back to the fall sports season, and we'll go over a lengthy review of the Emory Spartan football team. That's coming up next right here on Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to tonight's main event.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios, 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. Very excited for our next guest. We thought there was a very slim possibility we would get UFC 249, at least I did. I know our next guest thought there was absolutely no chance in hell that was happening, and that came to fruition late last week, when basically the powers that be at Disney told Dana White to stand down. No UFC 249. What does this mean for the national sports scene? And do we have an end in sight? Joining us right now to talk more about that, we have Larry Pepe. And again, Larry, one of the finest MMA minds around. Larry, I always look forward to the conversations. Thank you again for the time today.
Pleasure's mine, my friend.
As I just mentioned, you told me last week there's no way UFC 249 is going to happen, and we can talk about that in just a moment. But you and I had a different kind of conversation off the cuff just a few moments ago, and it's basically your thoughts on getting national sports back in circulation, at least here in the country. You're of the mindset that, look, we absolutely fully could continue with national sports, some of the big sporting events, in a controlled environment. You're under this impression.
I am. I do a podcast periodically because I used to do pro MMA radio. Now I do these MMA pep talks when the mood strikes me because, you know, I have a nice, vibrant following and they like to hear those things and it gives me a place to air my thoughts. And this was about 2.5-3 weeks ago. I went on and said, I am not against the UFC and other sports running, but I think you have to do it in a very tightly controlled environment with testing and a bunch of different protocols. And some of the things I outlined, you know, we can apply this to UFC 249. It could apply to a basketball game. It could apply to other sports. But you know, at the time, the testing that was available was basically about a five-day window. Now you have tests that are a 24-hour window, and the latest test is 5 to 13 minutes. So when I did the episode, I had said that, you know, if the UFC athletes, the fighters, everyone involved with the event, not just the fighters, but judges, referees, UFC officials, anyone who is going to physically be in the building would have to get tested and have their test results come back before the fight took place. But they'd have to get tested depending on which test you had access to, and because we see the sophistication changing week by week, they'd have to be tested in a time frame that was the closest to the fight as possible that would bring back the results. So now that you have these 15-minute tests, you could literally test them the day of the weigh-ins and the day of the fight and be sure that they were not getting in the cage or getting in the venue with the virus. I also talked about sterilizing the octagon in between rounds, sterilizing the gloves in between rounds, and taking other precautions, making sure that you have quick access, you know, to the test results, making sure that you have the sterilization protocols, you have the minimum number of people in the arena to facilitate the event. You don't have the announcers sit right close to the cage, but have them sit 10 feet back. Same thing with the judges, et cetera. You know, so protocols could be taken, because I am of the mindset that it's a very difficult thing when you quarantine people and tell people that they have to stay home and have all these orders all over the country, and then you take away every major sport and every form of entertainment in the sports world, which then trickles down to a lack of interesting topics and discussions for sports talk radio. I don't envy your job right now, and shoulder programming on ESPN and FS1, et cetera. And, you know, you have such scintillating topics of, like, you know, which was the best boxing match in the last 10 years. You're just struggling.
Yeah.
And I think the entertainment and giving people something to watch, giving people something to follow, makes the stay at home at least a little easier, and it gives people a distraction. And I think there's a value to that for the country. So, and I'm also of the mindset, Jordan, and I'm not somebody who takes this virus not seriously. I take it very seriously. I take every precaution I can. But the reality is that I would argue virtually every professional athlete, because of age and overall health, is really not in the wheelhouse of the people who die from this virus. And I think I've looked at this virus from day one in terms of death, because I don't delude myself or have the fantasy that we can protect everybody from getting sick. It's just not realistic, whether it's the flu, whether it's the virus, whether it's other illnesses that come and go and then you're okay. You can't protect, you can't put people in a plastic bubble. What you have to be concerned about is who's not going to recover. And when you look statistically at this virus, I saw one of my listeners sent me stats out of Canada that came out at over 90, I believe it was 98% of the people who passed away from the virus, which, again, I don't minimize, were over 60 years old. I don't know a professional athlete who's over 60 years old. And now we're finding out as well that the majority, overwhelming majority of people who passed away in New York had underlying medical conditions, which, again, most professional athletes don't have a lot of serious underlying medical conditions, the type of which appear to connect with this virus in a way that makes the person less likely to survive. So if the athletes are game, and if you take all these precautions, and then do, I would argue as well, you have to do, you know, temperature checks as well as the swabbing and everything else, just to take every precaution. And at that point, yes, I think you can let sports go forward with no fans. under that set of circumstances. Unfortunately, that is not what the UFC was doing. And that's exactly why, in my opinion, the event did not go forward.
Again, Larry Pepe, our guest right now. And Larry, we can transition and talk about UFC 249. We went into some of the logistics of it on Friday, and really it was interesting to say the least. And again, it appeared that Dana White was ready to go. He was ready to go all forward with it. A lot of the problem, of course, being that California was the first state in the nation to basically put in place a stay-at-home order. So what does Dana White do? He finds tribal land to put UFC 249 on. It was very secretive the way the entire deal was going down. And obviously the government gets involved. There's no California State Athletic Commission involved in this particular event. With that being said, the powers at ESPN and Disney kind of stand in and tell Dana White to stand down. And it's not shocking whatsoever that this event did not take place, although it may have been a step forward to making professional sports socially acceptable during this time. We can agree on that to an extent, right?
Well, I don't know that it really helped anything, because the Major League Baseball was already working on a plan for the season to take place in Arizona and spring training to start in May. And to be honest, I don't know that it contributed to the national landscape, because it was like a punchline. Like, people really weren't paying much attention. I'll tell you what really shocked me. What shocked me, it didn't shock me, it was canceled. I told you that it wasn't going to happen when everybody was saying that it was booked, confirmed, and everybody was getting ready. There's a couple of things. Number one, the stupidity of going to California. California has to be the last state that you would try to pull this off for two reasons. Number one, California was very aggressive with respect to COVID-19 in terms of, as you mentioned, first state to shut down. And the other issue, which is a huge issue that nobody's talking about, is that California is one of only six states in the United States that has Public Law 280. And Public Law 280 actually gives the state the right to go in and enforce civil and criminal penalties on tribal land. So if you are going to try to pull it off on tribal land, and for your listeners, the reason that the tribal land is significant is because if you do an event on tribal land, you are generally not subject to state laws and regulations wherever that tribal land sits. So if you do it in the state of California, then you're not subject to the California State Athletic Commission regulating your event. If you do it in the state of Nevada, you're not subject to the Nevada State Athletic Commission regulating your event. The problem they have is that because of Public Law 280, there's a very strong argument that the state could have shut it down anyway. So, and I think, you know, when you look at the secrecy that Dana tried to do this with, I won't tell anybody where it is. All you have to know is it's on ESPN. We knew it was on the West Coast. And I told friends of mine, it's probably at Tachi Palace, because Tachi Palace has run MMA events for years, and we had heard it was on the West, and that kind of added up. The other problem is that some tribal land has their own athletic commission, because they put on athletic events regularly. Other tribal land does not. And he chose to bring it to tribal land that did not has an athletic commission. So what's fascinating is that the UFC, you know, Lorenzo and Frank Fertitta, who invested in and built the UFC with Dana when they took it over years ago, their signature line was always that the thing that made them successful, the thing that allowed them to turn the UFC into the billion-dollar, multi-billion-dollar enterprise that it became, is that they always ran, their words, towards regulation, not away from regulation. And isn't it ironic that in this complete and utter desperation to put this event on, that they did the exact opposite here? Not Frank and Lorenzo, they're not involved anymore. But Dana and the UFC did the exact opposite. They ran away from regulation, strategically chose and a tribal land that did not have an athletic commission, did not work with the California State Athletic Commission, who said they would have nothing to do with it, and then secondarily want to do the Fantasy Island fights, where he's going to have an undisclosed island somewhere. And in that circumstance, the UFC would act as its own athletic commission, as they would on tribal land that doesn't have an athletic commission. And going back to what I said in response to your first question, the thing that really, my number one thing was that all the medicals, all the testing, and all of that would, of course, have to be handled by independent third parties, not by the UFC itself, because with something this serious, I do not believe you can trust them. Why do I say that? I don't know, because they did UFC Brazil, I'm old enough to remember, it was like a month ago on ESPN, and they did that after the COVID-19 outbreak. They did it with no fans, and the reports are that not a single fighter, not a single participant took a test, not one. So I looked at it like, okay, the only way you can do this is have trustworthy, aggressive medical supervision and testing, and that has to be by an athletic commission and independent third parties. And that simply wasn't going to be the case here.
Larry Pepe, again, make sure you follow Larry with his frequent pep talks. I look forward to these. And Larry, I'm going to let you go ahead and describe it to the listeners on how they can get these pep talks. Very simple. You can sign up. You get an email whenever one comes out. You can listen right there. It's very simple.
Very easy. All you do is go to Pepe, P-E-P-E Radio, so PepeRadio.com. You'll see the simplest sign-up form in the history of the internet. You put your email in and your first name or first initial, whatever you want, and boom. Hit submit and you're on the list. And then anytime I do these types of appearances or do the pep talks, I send out an email to whoever's on the list with a direct link, and you can listen at your leisure and hopefully for your enjoyment.
Larry, it's always great to have you on the show. I always look forward to the conversations. Thank you very much for the time, and I'm sure we'll catch up again real soon.
Sounds good.
Always fun to get Larry Pepe on the show. We've got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up. When we return, we're going to be joined by Dale Tafoya, longtime baseball author, has penned now two books regarding the Oakland A's. We'll talk about his latest. It's called Billy Bull, Billy Martin's time with the Oakland A's and how he helped resurrect the A's franchise that was in dire need. I'm looking forward to this conversation, and it's coming up next right here on Drive Time Sports.
Pitch to Bellinger. He swings and he hits a high fly ball right center field. This ball's gone!
Now 3-1 for Acuna. Swinging a high fly ball. Deep to left field. Way, way back. It's gone!
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
It's time for a history lesson here on Drive Time Sports. I'm looking forward to this conversation. The 1980 Oakland A's. They became a pop culture phenomenon. It's synonymous with success of the Oakland A's in the Bay Area. The 1980 season, it's when Billy Martin took over and took a team that was 54-108 in 1979 and turned them into instant winners overnight, basically, and also sparked, a lot of fame, including the great Ricky Henderson. Joining us right now to talk about the brief but interesting Billy Martin era with the Oakland A's, we have author Dale Tafoya. We're going to talk about his time around the Oakland A's and also his new book, Billy Bull, Billy Martin and the Resurrection of the Oakland A's. Dale, it is a pleasure to get you on the show today. Thank you for taking out the time to join us.
No problem, Jordan. Pleasure to be on your great show here.
Well, thank you very much. Let's talk about Billy Bull. Billy Martin and the Resurrection of the Oakland A's. I mean, this is really a team, and it's only a three-year span. And I think that's what makes this story so interesting. We're not talking about necessarily an entire era. We're talking about 3 years. But it did spawn a pop cultural phenomenon. And really, it set up the Oakland A's for success in the late 80s. I think it's a fascinating story that really occurred in a short period of time, Dale.
Absolutely. And yes, Billy Martin will always be remembered as a Yankee, but Billy Ball is a story about Billy Martin coming home. Billy Martin was a West Berkeley boy. And it's Billy Ball's story about Billy Martin coming home in 1980 and rescuing a very sick and unstable A's franchise. A's owner Charlie Finley, one of the great innovators of the game in the 70s, couldn't survive the economics of free agency, and the franchise was decaying badly in Oakland in the late 1970s. And Billy Martin arrived when the A's future was in limbo. In fact, Jordan, Lee McPhail, the American League president, even postponed printing the 1980 schedule because of the A's limbo. Yeah, so it's a tremendous story. And Billy Martin, of course, is this flawed individual, but he just had an ability wherever he went, Jordan, to turn bad teams around and make them winning. And he did exactly that with his hometown team, the Oakland A's, and starting in 1980.
It's a great place to start here with this story because I want the listeners who maybe aren't too familiar to understand the situation that the Oakland A's were in back in 1979. I mean, they finished 54-108, and as far as attendance is concerned, they were averaging less than 4,000 per game. That's correct, right?
Absolutely. The A's drew less than 307,000 for season attendance in 1979. On April 17th, 1979, Jordan, the A's announced a crowd of 653 fans.
Wow.
653 fans. Insiders who were there actually said there were about 250 in there. So, yeah, the A's, Charlie Finley was trying to unload the team, and he was running the A's on a shoestring budget and wanted to bring some excitement, and he always flirted with bringing Billy on board intermittently since the 1960s. And this is what makes this story fun, Jordan, is that even when Billy Martin, he finished his career with the Minnesota Twins, but he held on in Minnesota as the coach. When he was coaching in Minnesota, he knew that Charlie Finley, who was in Kansas City with the Kansas City A's, was going to move the A's to Oakland. And Billy Martin from Minnesota was always eyeing being that manager of his hometown team. So even when Billy Martin finally came to manage the team in 1980, he knew what was at stake. He not only wanted to bring wins to Oakland, he wanted to bring the fans to Oakland to save that franchise there.
That's the real interesting aspect of this story, because as you mentioned, Charlie Finley, look, it sounds like the hiring of Billy Martin was based squarely on creating excitement, a brand of baseball that would bring people out so Finley could unload the team. I mean, that's really the basis of it, which is an interesting story in itself if we're going to talk about the business aspect of this team.
Absolutely, and you can argue that Finley does not unload the team to Walter A. Haas Jr., the chairman of Levi Strauss, who purchased the team. The Haas family purchased the team and kept them in Oakland. Charlie Finley probably would have not unloaded the team unless he hired Billy Martin. And Billy Martin created so much interest in the area. And like you mentioned earlier, he made the Oakland A's into a mainstream pop culture phenomenon. I mean, the Time magazine featured Billy Martin with an A's cap on the front cover of their May 1981 issue.
Let's talk about some of the players on this Billy Martin era, this three-year span. One of my favorite players in a game of baseball that's just so interesting in general, it's Ricky Henderson. And I, you know, we could have a whole show on Ricky Henderson. He's absolutely fascinating. But the Ricky Henderson that we know, one of the best base stealers in the history of the game, one of the best leadoff hitters in Major League Baseball history, that all became about under Billy Martin. So Ricky Henderson, to me, is really interesting in this entire story, Dale.
Absolutely. And even when Ricky went on to play for Billy Martin with the Yankees, and Ricky Henderson, he was never really comfortable in New York without Billy Martin being his manager. It started with that connection in Oakland in 1980. And you have to remember, Charlie Finley is the owner who drafted Ricky Henderson in 1976 out of Oakland Technical High School. And Billy Martin came in, and he was just the perfect manager for Billy Martin's aggressive style of base running. What he emphasized, it was the perfect style for Ricky Henderson. I mean, Ricky Henderson, his first year playing, his first full year playing in Oakland in 1980, he swiped 100 bases. Only Lou Brock and Maury Wills was able to did that at the time. By 1982, Ricky Henderson swiped 130 bases in a season and shattered Lou Brock's all-time record. So, yes, the emergence of Ricky Henderson coincided when Billy Martin inherited that Oakland A's team in 1980.
Again, our guest right now is Dale Tafoya. He's the author of the new book, Billy Bull, Billy Martin, and the Resurrection of the Oakland A's. It hit bookstore shelves late March, so you can get your copy of Billy Bull right now. Let's continue to talk about this story in the 1980 season, Dale. It's a great memory for Oakland A fans, right, because you go from a 54-108 season to finishing above 500 in just 1 year under Billy Martin. You want to talk about a turnaround Cinderella story. I mean, that's that 1980 season.
Right, right. But here again, Jordan, Billy Martin did this everywhere he went.
Sure.
As I mentioned, when he finished his career with the Minnesota Twins, he hung on there for a coach. He got his managerial shot with the Twins in 1969. He resurrected them from the bottom. He went over after being fired. He was always fired these different places. But he went on after that to manage the Tigers. He resurrected them. Then he completely saved and resurrected Texas Rangers baseball in 1974. They were called Billy's Turnaround Gang in 74. Then he went on to manage the Yankees and brought the championship there in 77. And as you remember, October of 1979, George Steinbrenner, the plan was for Billy Martin to manage the 1980 Yankees. Billy Martin was supposed to manage the 1980 Yankees. But in October of 1979, he got into an altercation with a marshmallow salesman in Minnesota. George Steinbrenner was concerned. He thought either Billy was going to either hurt somebody in a bar or get hurt in a bar. So for PR's sake, he fired Billy Martin, and that's when Billy Martin became unemployed. And then Charlie Finley finally got an opportunity to hire him in February of 1980.
Again, Dale Tafoya, our guest right now, as we talk about his latest book, Billy Bull, Billy Martin and the Resurrection of the Oakland A's. So it's a great story in 1980. The A's finish above 500. 1981 rolls around. Billy Martin has more control over the team at this point in time. And really, had it not been for the strike-shortened season, who knows what would have become of this A's team.
Absolutely. I love talking about this 1981 season, Jordan. I mean, I love 80s baseball. And the A's started that season 11-0. At the time, that was the best start in baseball history. The A's went on to shoot to 17-1 and 20-3. And what's great about the Billy Ball story is not only the wins, but the crowds and the drawing power that Billy Martin had. Billy Martin connected so much with the working class in every city. In fact, owners really had to take into consideration before they fired Billy, the fans, because fans would protest after Billy would be fired, because Billy Martin was just, the fans always felt that he was a guy that you wanted in your corner. In 1981, the A's drew 1.3 million fans. That was minus, Jordan, minus 22 home dates that the 1981 strike took away. So yeah, the A's in 1981 owned the front cover, and of course the owners had this weird playoff scenario where there was a division miniseries, and after the A's beat the Royals in a three-game miniseries, they went on to face the Yankees in the American League Championship series, and reality hit them, and the Yankees swept them. But it was an incredible resurrection, not only in the standings, but attendance-wise. By 1982, the A's shattered the all-time franchise record by drawing over 1.7 million. And this is a club that lost 108 games in 1979 and drew less than 307,000.
For lighthearted baseball fans, I have to make sure we point out the five-man pitching rotation in 1980 for the Oakland A's, because it's a phenomenal story. We're talking about a five-man rotation: Mike Norris, Rick Langford, Matt Keough, Steve McCaddy, and Brian Kingman. A 1.4 ERA and 94 complete games between this group. I mean, it's a trivia question. It's almost unbelievable, especially with the way the game is played today.
Right, right. In 1980, the A's starting staff pitched 93 complete games. The A's reliever Bob Lacy completed number 94 in the last last day of the homestand in 1980. Steve McCaddy pitched one game. He threw 150 pitches in one game in 1980. Four of the A's five starters pitched complete game 14-inning games. 14-inning games for the A's starters. So it was incredible. But you have to know that Billy Martin did not have a Goose Gossage as a closer with the A's. He had Bob Lacy. Bob Lacy led the team with six saves. And that's what Billy's philosophy. Billy, he wasn't into rebuilding. He wanted to win right now. He wanted to win right now, and he knew the best shot to win right now back then was for all of his starters to complete games, and they did. And here again, these starters, the Matt Keogh's, the Mike Norris's, the Rick Langford's, Steve McCaddy's, Brian Kingman, they did not want to come out of the game. They were on the front cover of Sports Illustrated in 1981. They were used to playing in front of 500 fans in 1979. So they did not want to give up the limelight. They did not want to give Billy Martin that ball. They wanted to stay there, stay on that mound.
So you talked about being on the cover of Sports Illustrated 1981. So going back to the 1980 season and looking at the big drop-off in 1982, I mean, I guess it's a fair criticism to say that Billy Martin really shortened some of the careers by the amount of usage that he gave them over the course of two seasons.
Yeah, you could say that. He gets a lot of flack for that. But the story, really the real-time story, when you go back in 1980 again, is these players were just unknown players in the late 70s. They were just trying to just survive in the big leagues. They were trying to find a place in the big leagues, and this was their shot. And as tired as their arms were and as the pitch counts mounted, they cherished every moment. They cherished the press. They cherished the attention. And they were riding the momentum, and they just did not want to come out of the game. And Billy knew that Billy wanted to win. And the best chance for Billy Martin to win was to have his starters pitch the whole game so he didn't have to use his bullpen.
Now, Dale, following the 82 season, Billy Martin makes his return to New York, and there was a lot of odd behavior in 1982, and I'm not sure if you addressed this in the book or not, but I am curious as to your opinion on the theory that Billy Martin almost purposely acted out of line so he could work his way back to New York. I mean, is there any truth in anything that you have covered that suggests that may in fact be true, that he purposely tried to sabotage his final season away from the field to get back to New York?
Yeah, well, some say that. In fact, Peter Goldenbach, who's written a lot of great books on Billy Martin, he told me that what happened was George Steinbrenner told him, hey, Billy, we have a spot for you to come back to the Yankees in 1983 to be our manager, but you're going to first need to be fired from the A's. And that's when they say Billy Martin, in August of 1982, him and some coaches roughed up his office, and it was at that point that we knew Billy Martin would not be returning to the A's. However, there are others that say that Billy Martin wanted to stay in Oakland. He wanted to continue to stay in his hometown. But the A's new owners, the Haas family, they were committed to rebuilding the club through the farm system. And it just wasn't really a good fit. And I think the best thing was what happened during the 1982 World Series is when the Haas family fired Billy Martin, and Billy Martin was able to rejoin George Steinbrenner and the Yankees for the 1983 season.
Fascinating. Again, it's Billy Bull, Billy Martin and the Resurrection of the Oakland A's. Dale Tafoya, our guest right now, he's the author of the book. Dale, one last question before I let you go. When you take a look at the landscape of the 3 years that Billy Martin spent in Oakland, how instrumental is it to what we saw at the end of the decade where the A's go to three straight World Series, they even win one against the San Francisco Giants? How instrumental were the 3 years under Billy Martin at the beginning of the decade in correlation to the end of the decade?
Great question, because Billy Martin when he took over the team, there was a lot of other movements that took place. He brought in scouts. He brought in Dick Wincek, one of his scouting leaders with Oakland. Dick Wincek was later instrumental in signing Mark McGwire as the 10th overall pick in the 1984 draft out of USC. Billy Martin brought in a scout named Camilo Pasquale, who played with Billy with the Twins. Camilo Pasquale in 1982 signed a third baseman at a Coral Park High School in Miami named Jose Canseco. and Billy Martin brought in Camilo Pascual. And so, yeah, I think you can make an argument that Billy Martin set the foundation for what Tony La Russa inherited in 1986. He set the foundation for one of the premier farm systems in all of baseball, a farm system, Jordan, that brought Walt Weiss Rookie of the Year in 1988, Mark McGwire in 1986, and Jose Canseco. Actually, Canseco in 1986, McGwire in 1987, and Walt Weiss as the third consecutive Rookie of the Year in 1988.
Dale Tafoya, again, our guest right now. Dale, it was a pleasure to speak with you over the last 15, 16 minutes about Oakland A baseball. Before I let you go, please give the listeners all the information about Billy Ball, Billy Martin, and the resurrection of the Oakland A's, and also where they can find more of your work.
Oh, yes. It's online. You can get it at on Amazon, and it's all over the country. Bookstores aren't open right now, but you can get it online. And, yeah, the e-book selling, and there was some shipping issues with Amazon with the essentials, but I'm getting a lot of pictures on Twitter of books arriving, so it's available. It'll get you soon when you order it. It's just a really fascinating story about Billy Martin. Always remembered as a Yankee, but he came home and saved that Oakland A's franchise, his hometown franchise.
Dale Tafoya, once again. Dale, a pleasure to get you on. I thoroughly enjoyed the conversation. Thank you very, very much for the time today.
My pleasure, Jordan. Take care.
Fascinating story. Again, Dale Tafoya, our guest here, giving us a history lesson on the Oakland A's. We've got a break for just a moment. We'll come back and put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports when we return live from the Auto Farm Studios.
Hey, this is Stephen Curry from the Golden State Warriors, number 30. You listen to Drive Time Sports on KOAL 750 AM.
We're back to close out this edition of Drive Time Sports. And again, if you missed the announcement earlier today, the Utah High School Activities Association has canceled all remaining spring activities, including sports and state championships. And the current UHSAA policies will continue to prohibit the use of facilities in organizing practices or team gatherings until further notice. You can check out that full press release right now at CastleCountryRadio.com. Boy, your heart really hurts for those outgoing seniors. Their high school career, as far as the spring sports season is concerned, is now over with. You really, really feel bad for those kids who have put in that time and effort. But again, that full press release is available at CastleCountryRadio.com. Out of time on the show today, I want to thank Dale Tafoya and also Larry Pepe for joining us. We'll jump back over and talk more NFL football in anticipation of the NFL draft. That'll be on the show tomorrow. Be safe. I am out.